How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. It is late on a Sunday night. Both Harrison and I feel like we've been run over by 50 Robert Sock Rays. We're going to get through this show. It might be a little on the shorter side because so little happened over the weekend. We have a whole week, though, of actual basketball to analyze. That's going to be fun. The last week was great. I don't know if you missed the show that we recorded for Friday with John Ireland, make sure you jump on that podcast. That was a lot of fun. And you can find all those shows on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. The easiest way that you to avoid missing any shows is just to subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you leave us a review. And then also make sure that you're using the promo code LLLakers on SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate. This show, it would not be where we are right now without the support that we've gotten from them. So they've been really good to us. So be really good to them in return.
And help us keep the show rolling.
Yeah. I my light's still above me. Doesn't want to work, but
yeah, that would be, I think the viewers would have more sympathy if this wasn't an audio only podcast, but I will vouch for Anthony's journalistic integrity, and the light above him is actually like, it's not functioning. I was over at his house the other day. Mm-hmm. It's a real problem. I mean, I told him to try changing the light bulb, but he's like, then I'd have to get up. So,
well, no, it's like way up there.
Yeah, it's high. So ceiling. We're just going to let it roll for now. I mean, it's not like it's a lighting issue for an audio only show. So
yeah. That's a fair point. So basically, if you didn't enjoy the conversation that just happened right there, you're not going to like this podcast because there's so little to talk about. But really quick recap of the first week of training camp. And the first thing that jumps out at me from throughout this first week was how thrilled Luke Walton seems to be there. It's rubbing off on everybody who's involved with the training camp. And his quotes about being the coach and his coaching style and the way he plans to lead people have been great. Harrison has a few quotes in front of him. Well,
that kind of leads me into listener Jared McCarty, or Machart, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, but Jared McCarty, I think, mm-hmm. at Jared McCharty. He said, what's your thoughts on Luke's comments about cutting screen away and bigs rolling hard to the rim? Can't help but be excited. And I think that's been the genuine theme of the training camp. No, I mean, no matter what Luke's talking about, whether it's scheme stuff, whether it's about the players, whether it's about bowling, whether it's about his rookie, the way he was treated as a rookie, no matter what he said, it's pretty much garnered a positive reaction from, I think, the Lakers fan base as a whole, from his players, from, I mean, I would imagine any other sentient races that are picking up these radio waves in like a couple hundred years or so and listening to this podcast very confused. Welcome. Thank you for listening. Use the promo code LLLakers on SeatGeek if SeatGeek's still around. And so I think he's just been kind of a glowing beacon of positivity overall. Like, I think fans and the players are excited about the ball movement, excited about the new system. We got to look at some of that in the training camp footage the NBA TV had. And I think people are just as excited that he's not actively crapping on his players the entire camp. Other than Kobe.
Let's go ahead and let's get a couple of the quotes out there. Do you have the one that he talked about empowering his players in front of you by chance?
No. Would have been nice if you had told me which specific quotes you wanted me to grab. But he did talk about how he wanted to empower his players, and he's talked about how he wants them to police themselves. He talked today about, or I guess Sunday, he talked about how he hasn't really had to be the bad guy yet because the players have been getting on themselves. He said that there have been leaders and they've been kind of getting on each other, and he says that if that doesn't happen, then he has to step in. But as long as the guys are kind of getting on each other and trying to force each other to have good habits, then he doesn't really have to be the quote-unquote bad cop.
I have a quote.
Okay, go for it.
Quote, I want to empower... So he was asked, I believe it was a question directly about, you know, empowering D'Angelo Russell, but then he said basically, or actually verbatim, I want to empower all of our players, honestly, Walton said. When players take over and they take ownership of the team, they play harder. They hold each other accountable because it's their team. And it sounds like something that anybody should know, right? That sounds like something, it should just come as second nature as this is taking place. But he's completely right. Right, like if you paid rent and owned, and the room that you were sitting in appreciated value based on whether or not you cleaned it up consistently, you would take ownership of that room, and that room, I would imagine, is going to look better consistently than if you just kind of inhabit the room and come and go as you please. And it doesn't really affect you either way, whether or not the room gains value because of your direct actions. And this may or may not be a take on the unmade bed that's behind you, but that's exactly what he's talking about there.
Yeah, I mean, if I were a responsible adult, I'd agree with you. But you know, I am a mere slovenly blogger/aggregator. And so that's not what I do, but yeah, I mean, most like good people that take responsibility for themselves would probably do that.
No, I'm not. I found it interesting coming from where the Lakers came from last year, where it was almost like a made decision not to empower the kids, right?
No, I mean, if anything, it was showing them that they had no power and that they were rookies, and that was just what it was. And they needed to learn. They needed to earn that power by, you know, in minutes that they weren't getting.
Right. And if you were to ask, and I think a huge part of the reason, we'll talk about this, I guess, in a bit. We don't have to talk about it in a bit, but when you look at the vibes surrounding this training camp, the two things that jump out at you is that Kobe's not there, and the last guy's not there. And the vibe, you know, it's a lot more mature group of kids than they seemed like last year. And I think a huge part of that is because Luke is allowing them...
They were taught to man up?
Yeah. But I think a huge part of that is Luke is allowing them to mature. He's giving them the rope. Now, the counter to that is he's giving them the rope to hang themselves with, right? If this doesn't work out very well, then you kind of go back and you say, well, maybe this is why rookies don't have as much freedom, right? Or kids don't have as much freedom. But as of right now, when he's talking about, you know, guys holding themselves accountable, that's, in my opinion, a direct result of them being allowed to hold themselves accountable. I think at the end of the day, if you make it to the NBA, you've developed some at least decent habits when it comes to growing your game and growing as a team. And the idea that just because, you know, so-and-so hadn't, you know, X rookie hasn't played in the NBA and now they just don't know what it takes to be successful there, I don't quite agree with that, because you need to be able to you need to learn, and you're not going to be, I don't think that's something that you're taught. I think you have to actively learn that lesson.
I mean, my rebuttal would be the kind of scores of players that recently Reggie Jackson was a guy that talked about how Detroit's veteran leaders really helped them last year learn how to take care of themselves on and off the court. So I do think that there's value in, I do think players have things to learn when they get to the NBA. I don't mean to imply that you were saying that that wasn't the case, but that's kind of how it sounded to me. So, I mean, I think they, like, just to be clear, I think we both agree that players have things to learn when they get to the NBA, mm-hmm. but they have to be put in a situation where they're actually learning. And it's not just like that when they're a year older, they're going to magically understand what it takes to play in the NBA. They have to be taught things. And that's one of the things that I think the players have kind of subtly thrown shade at the last guy by talking about. I think Russell was saying today that everything that they're doing has a purpose and they can see what that purpose is. And Luke Walton's talked about that the players will ask him why and he'll explain to them why they're doing things. And it's just when everything has a purpose and you could directly see what the point of it is, it's easier to motivate yourself to do it rather than just platitudes.
And that's a very, I would say, millennial concept, right? Where in prior generations it was, wait, why are we doing this, coach? Because I effing said so, kid. You know, wait, why are we trying to run through an actual wall? Because I was told that my players have to run through walls for me, kid. You know, whereas and I'm sorry, I agree with the concept that if I don't understand why I'm doing something, I'm just flat out not going to do it.
I mean, you'd know better than most that I would kind of agree with that sentiment based on our discussion before the podcast about what we were going to talk about today and our debate about that. And we'll get into that in a minute. But mm-hmm. yeah, so
go ahead.
No, I just agree that that's a better way of dealing with people in general. I don't think that it was done back in the 80s or 90s or whenever the time was that you just told people to do things and they just did it like very military style. I don't know that that's ever been the best way and the best way to get the most out of people. I mean, I guess maybe there are some people that style of motivation works for, but I know for me personally, that's not how I prefer to be treated. I think everyone prefers to be treated with respect and with, you know, like at least like everybody wants to know why they're being told to do something.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other quotes in front of you before we move on?
Well, you said that you wanted me to pull up praise about from Walton about the young players to kind of demonstrate what we're talking about here. So Walton on D'Angelo Russell, he's been great. He's been professional. He's been vocal. He's doing everything we're asking. Walton on Julius Randle. Julius was phenomenal. The way he ran the court today was incredible. He was phenomenal from the first drill we did of three-man weave. And these are from various beat reporters. I'm not going to let Serena Winters, Mark Medina, Baxter Holmes, Tanya Ganguly. I'm just going to shout you all out now and then continue to read these. Just some of the ways Luke Walton described Brandon Ingram today. Attitude is awesome. The guy is incredible. He's a phenomenal guy. Luke Walton on Brandon Ingram. If you're watching him closely like coaches do, you'd be really happy with the way he performed today. Luke Walton on Jordan Clarkson. He called him one of the best defenders on the hold on. Let me scroll to the actual quote.
He said something along the lines of he's one of the best defenders on the team right now. Like he's yes. shown himself to be one of the best defenders on the team.
Yes.
Which is like I'll use this quote in particular because it caught my eye as well. Jordan Clarkson has told basically anybody who stood there long enough that he wants to be a better defender this year than he was last year, right?
I think that's just his go-to answer for any question.
Yeah.
I think if somebody asks him where he wants to go for lunch, he's like, well, you know, I really want to be a better defender this year. I think it's like it's become just habit for – and then he catches himself and he's like, oh, actually, you know, I'll go check out In-N-Out today. I guess that sounds good. But I think every single question he's asked at this point, he just responds about wanting to be a better defender.
And now here's where – and I might be giving Luke too much credit, but – a good coach would hear that constantly, right? A good coach monitors the media, monitors the quotes that his players are giving, and a good coach would catch the quotes that Jordan is giving regarding his defense, and giving him that little bump about his defense is the kind of thing, especially with a young player who I would imagine checks his mentions, checks the stories that are about him, and you know, genuinely cares about what people are saying about him right now at this stage of his career. If Jordan goes out there and Clarkson goes out there and hears, you know, Walton give him that minor little bump about his defense, gives him that compliment about his defense, Clarkson kind of thinks to himself, okay, cool, what I'm doing right now works. I'm going to continue to do it. I'm going to continue probably to work even harder because I'm doing the right thing right now. And that's a huge thing for a young team like we talked about a second ago. It's huge that the motivation factor is inherent, whereas last year I don't know if the motivation came from constant crapping.
Yeah, Luke has definitely taken the strategy of, to steal a term from psychologist Carl Rogers from back in my days as a psych major when I essentially wasted 2 years of my college career. But no, I didn't waste it. I mean, I learned a lot. But so anyway, he talked to Rogers used to, he kind of came up with the concept of unconditional positive regard. And he talked about it as just kind of the basic, I'm reading from a definition here, but the basic acceptance and support of a person, regardless of what the person says or does, especially in the context of client-centered therapy. And so obviously Luke Walton is not a therapist, but he kind of is taking that stance with his players. He's praising them unconditionally, like kind of no matter what. And so, like, just to kind of pump them up. And I think that it seems to be motivating them.
Yeah. And it's and working.
Just to run down some more. He talked about how Ingram is stronger than he looks, but it hasn't even just been the young guys. He says, he said Timofey Mozgov was the best in the league at verticality and protecting the rim. So we'll see, I guess. And, he said of E.G. Onleon, he's been shooting the heck out of the ball, which is obviously something we could use. A big man that can step up behind the three-point line and help space the floor. I'm a big believer in playing an open space style of game, and he's probably our best three-point shooter out of the bigs. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just about the only thing that they've done that he hasn't been impressed with was the rookie singing performances. And if you didn't look up the video of that, it's on silverscreenandroll.com. Shout out to, I forgot the name of the student that periscoped it, but I downloaded her feed and put it up there. And it's amazing. But Luke Walton said, you know, even in criticism, he is nice. I respected the effort. I was not impressed with the talent.
And now we've talked about the effect it has on the players, but I would say it has an effect on everybody around the team. Like, even the beat reporters seem happier. Like, the beat reporters look like they had a blast out there in Santa Barbara.
Right? I mean, Santa Barbara's pretty great.
It is a great city.
I think they had fun in Hawaii last year too. So
that's also fair. Yeah. But I don't know. I it looks like
in
this
fact
team
I mean
is,
Byron Scott. Like, he was not. No, that doesn't count. We agreed on amnesty before the podcast.
No, we did not. We didn't.
Yes, we did. You said we weren't playing the game this one.
I didn't. Oh, my goodness. All right, guys, you have to tell me. But I.
You did. You said we were holding it off because it wouldn't. Anyway, well, you said the next segment wouldn't make sense without it. We agreed on that, I thought.
I thought we were going to apply the rule once we start that segment, not for the entire show.
Well, that's entrapment, I feel like, but
oh my gosh.
You did not explain that. But anyway, the Lakers former head coach did not seem, he never seemed happier than last season when he was in Hawaii. And like, when I think did he wear Hawaiian shirts to a practice or two? We'd have to go back and look that up. I'm pretty sure I vaguely remember that.
Now I really want to see if there's a picture of him in like some lei.
I think there probably is.
Yeah.
But he never seemed happy. I mean, if the Lakers would have just played their whole season in Hawaii, then, I mean, D'Angelo Russell might have had a much more enjoyable year.
Yeah, they might have a relationship still. I don't know. I guess in what I was going to say, you know, I talked about the beat reporters having a good time. But multiple times over this past week, I've said to myself, holy crap, I love this team, right? And one such occasion was, you know, D'Angelo Russell did the real training camp. He did the little Q&A with the hosts of that show, was left hanging, and shook his own hand. The vine is up all over the place. Lakers Outsiders, I think, was the first that I saw to catch it.
Yeah, and then a couple of people did the tattletale thing. Yeah. Well, no, I was going to say the just like who did this version of citation. Like they were just trying to figure out who did it.
Right.
So,
the Lakers Outsiders added D'Angelo Russell with the video, and Russell retweeted it. He's, you know, and he laughed at himself about he seemed ready to laugh at himself about the thing, because then multiple people were adding him with the video and talking, you know, and he retweeted those as well. And that's not the kind of thing you do if you aren't having a really good time that comes from more than just being in a, you know, desirable location like Hawaii. Right, he looks like he's genuinely having a good time, and a good enough time to laugh at himself when something like that happens. And it was really funny. It's a really funny clip. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
It was a smooth recovery, because I gotta say, I've been rejected for handshakes before, and I'm usually not that smooth about playing it off.
What was smoother? And I don't know if you've actually seen this one, but Phil Jackson getting left hanging and his response to it, where he just kind of like scratched the back of his head, or D'Angelo Russell kind of doing, you know,
the... Oh, it was definitely Russell's. It was 100% Russell's.
I agree, although that clip with Phil Jackson is great.
Although it is funny that he just shut his response to that was I guess he learned a lot last year that when he tried to interact with people that were older than him, he was going to get left hanging a lot. So he did learn something last year.
Yeah, thanks guys. All right, so anything else that you wanted to talk about before we move on to the last segment of the show?
I mean, just that I'm going to be incredibly disappointed if Mozgov is not the best at verticality in the entire league this year. Although I have to say, you know, we talked about Roy Hibbert verticality last year, and we mixed it up. We got our directions wrong. He was the expert at horizontality last year. So we messed that up. That one's on us as analysts. But yeah, I'm excited for Big Timo causing opponents to shoot like 30% at the rim next year, because I think that's a guarantee at this point.
You're a Parks and Rec fan, right?
Yeah.
You remember the scene where Chris Pratt's character is, you know, he had just started shining shoes and he said he was getting shoe shine head. It was like a headache that was only cured by like... And one of the cures was lying there, like, taking a nap on the cold tile. And people were, like, stepping over him on his way there. I'm picturing Roy Hibbert as – and that's his horizontality.
That was the practice facility last year. They just, like, walk into random rooms and have to, like, be looking at the floor just in case Roy Hibbert fell down.
He's just playing possum. That's one way to go about this. All right. The last little tidbit, and like we said, this is going to be a shorter show, but tomorrow we're going to preview the game. There's going to be more to talk about from that. The following day, we're going to recap the first preseason game, and that'll be fun to talk about actual basketball.
I'll be there, so hopefully we'll have some things to discuss.
Yeah, and so the last segment here, and this is where I thought we were going to amnesty the aforementioned game.
You can start. All right, I was entrapped, but whatever. We can start now.
I'll be nice with the tweet. I'll be okay. Semi nice.
Half strength.
I do hope Darius retweets it.
Okay,
that'd be funny. All right, so we are no longer playing the Byron Scott game. This is a form of 50 Shades of Shade, and the reason we are not playing the game is because, I don't know if you guys have watched the video in which Byron Scott, and he made news because he says he doesn't have a relationship with Russell, nor does he necessarily want one. And on its face, if you just read the words, you kind of read that as, oh, cool.
It's one of those things where the quote sounds like 1,000 times worse out of context.
Yeah. But the reason we said we would say Byron's name in this segment is because I watched the video right before we went on the air, and I believe Harrison, you watched it too, right? Right before we went on the air? No?
Sure.
And I felt bad for the guy. He's out there, he's enjoying a, it looked like date night, you know, with a significant other, and some tool bag with a camera gets up in his face and asks him, you know, 9-10 questions in repeated fashion while following it with, you know, the aforementioned camera. And I couldn't help but feel like, man, this poor dude, like, just get out of his way. Let the guy enjoy his night. He obviously doesn't want to answer questions. And that annoyance kind of at the end of the video, the annoyance led to, I would say, brutal honesty, in which he said that he doesn't have a relationship with D'Angelo Russell, nor does he want one. And while, yes, it is, there is some shade being thrown there, I would say you could make the argument very easily that he was led to get to that point, right?
He was baited a little bit.
A lot of it. he was baited a lot of bit to get to that point. And, you know, while it is easy to crap on Byron, in this case, I feel like the story was overblown, and it was always going to be overblown because of the parties who were involved. And it just didn't need to go there. Now, with all of that said, Harrison and I had the conversation before we went on the air about, do we talk about Byron too much? Let's go. We'll run this as a poll. I think this is best served as a poll. And I would argue that we do not. Harrison was of the opinion that we do. Let's really quick. Let's go for a minute. Why do we talk about Byron too much, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, for one, he's no longer the coach of the Lakers, I think, is part of it. I think he is, like, if not the worst coach of all time, he's bottom three, mm-hmm. at least in terms of guys that have gotten to coach for an extended period of time in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes it's an easy go-to, and I think sometimes it's too easy to blame him for things. And I honestly think my opinion is he's fired now. I just think there's a point where it's beating a dead horse. Like, he's not the coach of the team anymore. And I feel like we discuss him or avoid his name, at least when we're being fined for it, in almost every single episode of the show. And, like, I get it. It's an easy parallel to come back to because of how easy he made it for Luke Walton to win over the PR. Like, the bar for Luke Walton was three-pointers are bad and don't crap on the young kids. And he's, like, he's cleared those, you know, like, full body twice over. Like, he has fully rocketed over that bar. And I just think that I think it's too easy sometimes, and I think that ultimately it's just like he's not the coach of the Lakers. He's not the coach anymore. He's gone, and I just don't think that we need to give him. I think we're past the point where we need to be consistently addressing it.
So, I agree with most of what you're saying there, but I would say I take issue with, you know, because we've been told that we use it as a crutch, as a crutch in our analysis, right? And my counter is that as of right now, as the season goes along and we see more actual basketball that we get to watch and we actually get to analyze that, then sure, if we continue to go back to Byron, then the criticism is completely fair. We really need to move away. But as of right now, we have nothing else to go on other than this is what the last guy did. This is what Luke did. What Luke's done so far has seemed to go really, really well with a group of young people. And I made the case in the last segment that it's gone over really, really well with the people who are, you know, also involved with the team, whether it's beat reporters, fans, whatever. And as of right now, I just don't know of any other way to analyze the team. Now, part of it, you have to find ways to analyze it, and I think we've done that to a certain extent. I think there are times where we just look at what we're watching there on the court, and we say, yeah, that looks like a fun way to play the game, without necessarily mentioning him. But even then, inherently, you're only a sentence away, you're only a statement away from, that looks like a fun way to play. That definitely was not a fun way to play.
I think maybe I give our listener, this sounds like I'm pandering, but I mean, maybe I'm giving our listeners too much credit that they understand kind of the unsaid thing there. I just don't know that it needs to be hammered home constantly.
Yeah.
I think that he, to his credit, I mean, there are coaches where we can debate, like, was that guy good? Was that guy bad? Was he just in kind of a situation where there was no way he could win? But he was so bad that I honestly think that, like, if you're defending the job that he did, you're just, like, empirically wrong. And I think that he was so bad that people get that without it even being said. I think it was just so glaringly obvious. The analogy I made when we were having our debate about whether or not we should do this segment even before the show was that it's so obvious as to be similar to pointing out every single game that the Lakers won or lost because they either outscored or didn't outscore the other team. Like, it was that obvious. It was just like his job last year. People talk about how hard it was, and to some degree it was, managing the Kobe farewell tour with the kids. But he would have had such an easy win if he had just not made it seem like it was completely beneath him to even try and coach the kids at all.
Right.
Without just like kowtowing to, you know, like there was a way last year to have the Kobe farewell tour and like just don't actively crap on the Lakers young players the whole year. Like that's all it would have taken for him to have like an actual
kind
of rapport to have 80% of the fan base not like him. I mean, I almost feel bad for him because he's one of the better, like he is like a Lakers legend as a player.
Right.
Like I think he's historically underrated. He was unbelievable during those Showtime years. Like if you go, I remember when he was first hired, I went back because I'm too young. Like I didn't see him play a whole lot. But if you go back and like look at tape of him playing or you look at stats from when he played, like he's a historically underrated player. He was a good player for the Lakers, and he's unfortunately just completely destroyed his legacy with the franchise because now he's always going to be seen as this villain.
Mm-hmm. Now this is the last point I'm going to make on the topic. Here's why I have no problem whatsoever talking about Byron Scott as of right now. The segment
other than
that,
in the game, other than on the other podcast where we aren't allowed to say his name,
but that's as strong as you have ever sounded on this show on a topic. He just, because of how bad he was and because of how much fun the kids appear to be having right now.
Should I have played the Harrison's hot take segment? Was that
strong? No,
because
I
I've sounded stronger, I would argue.
Oh, sure. After that. anybody listening right there, it's impossible to look at last year to this year and not get passionate about the fact that, like, dude, your job wasn't that hard. That was the case that I made at the end of the year. Like, he didn't have expectations other than just get Kobe through the year and don't look like you actively hate the kids. And he accomplished the Kobe one, even though there were moments where we thought, well, you might be playing him.
Like, is Kobe going to make it?
Yeah. So if we use the baseline of our analysis of, like, you didn't have that tough a job, yet you still completely crapped the bed. That analysis, while easy and while extremely obvious, needs to be pointed out. And
I think it's so obvious that it almost doesn't need. I think the implication is there when you talk about the new guy. I just don't know that we need to constantly go back to him.
Yeah. And like I said, as the year goes along, I would hope that we move off of that. But as of right now, we have nothing else to go off of. We have no, what else is there to analyze other than coaching technique from last year to this year?
Yeah, I think we can talk about the positivity of the new staff without consistently having to go back to the old one. But now I feel like we're just talking in circles.
Yeah. All right, so that does it for today's show. You guys tell us. If we are talking too much about him, then we will try to adjust. We've already played the game, but even with the game, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. But we will genuinely...
I mean, that was almost a criticism of that criticism.
It was on my part. If you honestly feel that way, we will try to adjust the show. We are here to entertain you. And if enough people speak up and if enough people actually feel this way, then we will adjust our show and we will try to make the show better for you. But as of right now, like I said, there's nothing else to go off of. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. If you've missed any shows, make sure you catch up on those shows with Audio Boom, iTunes, Silverscreen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break.
If you missed the John Ireland one, go check that out. He was awesome on Friday. We always try to do a good show for you, but we aren't John Ireland. And so I think he added a little bit when we had him on Friday. That was really good.
There was
and
a
please,
phenomenal
if you,
Chickern story in there.
Yeah, he talked about possibly bringing back the soundbite of Chick Hearn and his famous put the game in the refrigerator call. I'm not going to try and do it because that's why I'm not a play-by-play guy.
Are you serious? Yeah. You can't do it?
No, there's no way.
Really?
Yeah, I'll stumble somewhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, the game is in the refrigerator. The door is closed, the lights are out, the eggs are cool, and the butter's getting hard, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
Maybe I just have too much respect for Chick Hearn to not just blatantly steal his call on air. But just say, just yell who did this, and I think journalistically you're okay.
Savage.
Yeah, okay. So see, that was, man, that was savage plagiarism. All right. So I think we're good on the attribution front there now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we got off track here. But if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. That really helps us out, and we're continuing to try and bring the show to you guys, and we appreciate all of you that have supported us and brought us from a little YouTube live stream with like two viewers to where we are now on the Locked On Podcast Network, which we couldn't be happier to be a part of.
If somebody leaves a review saying that we are not sarcastic enough, I will personally retweet it from every account that I have. I will screen grab it and I will at you because I just find that I...
No, screen grab it yourself and send it to us.
Yeah, send it to me. I will retweet it from every account that I manage, except for one. I can't do it from one. But still, every single social media account that I can, I will retweet it from because... I don't think we are sarcastic enough to be quite honest.
I don't know, man.
All right, everybody, make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers, and we will talk to you again tomorrow. Shouts to Brian Shaw.